Essentially, what identity is and what I'm going to be focusing on in my sermon, and I'm going to just take one part of it. There's a much bigger aspect to it. But what I'm going to focus on is identity is where we get our value from. So it's where I figure I kind of fit in the world. It's where I think that I matter. I have value. I have purpose. I have meaning. That's what identity is. And so when we talk about moving our identity into Christ, very simply, it means that all of my value, all of my standing in life, all of my love, all of my purpose is found in Christ alone. That's what it means. So I just got a couple quick points for you guys. I'm going to be talking about how to get your identity fixed in Christ and what it looks like to not have your identity in Christ and why Christ is better, why he's superior to this world. So really quickly, I have a quote for you guys. This is from an atheist, actually. Very interesting. This is from an atheist. His name is David Foster Wallace. He was a very famous author back just a couple years ago, actually. He was actually, I don't even know what it's called, but he was a major, like, big head at a literature college. And he actually committed suicide just a couple years ago. Before he committed suicide, he wrote this. This is a commencement speech that he gave at that college, and it's really interesting. And I just want you guys to listen to what he's saying. Remember, this is coming from an atheist. And just hear this and kind of figure out where you think this guy's identity is coming from, where his value is coming from. Listen to this. Here's one thing else that's true. In the day-to-day trenches of adult life, there's actually no such thing as atheism. There's no such thing as not worshiping. Everybody worships. The only choice we get is what to worship. And an outstanding reason for choosing some sort of God or spiritual type of thing to worship, be it JC, Allah, Yahweh, the Wiccan mother goddess, the four noble truths, or an infrangible set of ethical principles, is that pretty much anything else you worship will eat you alive. If you worship money and things, if they are where you tap real meaning in life, then you will never have enough. Never feel that you have enough. It's the truth. Worship your own body and beauty and sexual allure, you will always feel ugly. And when your time and age start showing, you will die a million deaths before they finally plant you. On one level, we all know this stuff already. It's been codified in myths, proverbs, cliches, bromides, epigrams, parables, the skeleton of every great truth. The trick is keeping the truth up front in the daily consciousness. Worship power. You will feel weak and afraid. You will need more and more power over others to keep the fear at bay. Worship your intellect. Being seen as smart, you will end up feeling stupid, a fraud, always on the verge of being found out, and so on. The insidious thing about these forms of worship is not that they're evil or sinful, it is that they're unconscious. They are the default setting. They're the kind of worship you just gradually slip into after day, getting more and more selective about what things and how you measure value without ever being fully aware that's what you're doing. All right? Now, like I said, after he gave his commencement speech, he died. He committed suicide. Now, let's think about some of the things he said, though, because I think they're actually really insightful and they're really key for us to focus on as we go through our study tonight. And it's things that we should really start meditating on as Christians. Here's what he's saying. How he defines identity, he actually uses a word for it. Did you guys catch what word that was? He said worship. Did you guys catch that? He says there's no such thing as atheism. Everybody worships. The only thing we get to do is we get to choose what to worship. All right, so that's what he actually uses. That's the wording he uses for what we get identity from. What do you worship? What do you worship? And another important thing about when we talk about identity, where you get your ultimate value and meaning, and this is going to really help us, your heart is deceitfully wicked above all things. Who can know it? So if I sit in this room today and I say, you know what, all my purpose, value, meaning, it comes from God, I'm probably lying. I'm probably lying. And this is one way to figure out, what do I really find my identity? What do I really find my value in? Here it is. What do you worship? What do you worship? What do you praise? And that's what that word means. What do you praise? What are you thinking about all the time? What is your mind on? And here's another thing to think about. Not only what do you praise, what is your mind thinking about constantly trying to achieve, but this other one, what do you fear? What is something you're afraid of? What is the one thing that if you think you lose, you would lose all of your identity, meaning, self-worth, and value? Now, as you think about those things, that is your God. That is your idol. That is the thing that you ultimately mine. As he says, that's what you mine value and meaning for. And notice what he says. He says, these things are insidious. I like that word. Insidious means that they're deceptive. They're deceptive. At the forefront of your mind, you're not going to think that you worship. You're not going to think that you worship. At the forefront of your mind, every single person in here probably would say, you know what, I worship God alone. We would all say that, but you know what? We'd be lying. The insidious thing about where we find our ultimate value and meaning is that it resides in the back, our unconsciousness. We slowly slip into it. That's what he's saying. We slowly slip into it. And notice what he says, these things will eat you alive. They'll eat you alive. Because no matter what these things are, you'll never feel like you have enough. You'll always feel like you're lacking something. You'll always feel like you're lacking something. So think about the examples that he gave, and I think they're really important, the examples that he gave, because they tend to be the ones that we most readily go to. All right, the first one he gave is money. First one he gave is money. If you think that money is the thing that's going to get you happiness, he says you'll always feel poor. You'll always feel poor. So think about your monetary state today. If you always feel like you're lacking money, you always feel like you can have more and more and more and more and more. Do you ever stop to think that just by living in America, you're rich? Just by living in America, if you were to put yourself on a sliding scale compared to the rest of the world, you are rich beyond your wildest dreams. So if you got this insatiable feeling of I don't have enough money, you know where that comes from? Idolatry. You're finding your value, your worth, your sustenance in money. And it's not just necessarily money. It's what money buys. It's your house. It's the clothes you wear. It's the car you drive. Right? It's your retirement fund. It's where you go to work and make your money. Right? That is where you find your value and your meaning. And that is why, especially as a man, right? When you go and you meet another man, what's the first question that they ask you? What do you do? What do you do? What does that reveal? Where's the identity of that person who's asking? It's in his job, right? It's in his job. Nobody who's out of work is going to ask that question, right? Nobody who's unemployed is going to be like, hey, dude, what do you do for a living? They're not going to ask that. Why? Because they don't want that question reversed on them. All right? The people who find their value and their meaning and their sustenance in what they do for a living are automatically going to ask you what you do. Why? Because that's what is important to them. It's what's important to them. And like I said, it's not just the job thing. Like I said, we have tons of websites. We have Facebook. We have Instagram. We have MySpace. We have, I don't think anyone uses MySpace anymore, do they? I'm not too hip anymore. Some people do. Jerry does. All right, that's enough for me. Now, all right, he's the only one on there. All right, we got all these social media sites. What they essentially do is they prop up people's identity. Meaning, I could see somebody's identity in one page, in one snapshot of their pictures. I could tell where that person pulls meaning and value in their life. You know, it could be from, like I said, it's the house that they have. It's the family that they have. A lot of people, they pull a lot of value and meaning from their family. How does my family see me? A lot of moms, a lot of dads. How are my kids turning out? How many of you guys, all of us are kids, obviously. We all have parents. How many of you guys, whenever you get into trouble, though, you can see this insidious thing happening in your parents' eyes where the first thing that they fear when you get into trouble is, how is this going to reflect on me? How many of you guys have seen that before? You know, they may not say it out loud, but you can tell. You can tell. The most important thing to my dad right now is how this is going to reflect on him. My behavior is going to reflect on him. Right? What does that show? It shows his value. My value is how my kids act. My value is in my kids. My value is in my wife. My value is in my husband. My value is in how they see me. And especially when all of us go through our rebellious phase, right? We go through our rebellious phase. We're like, I don't care what my parents think about me. You know what you did? You didn't get rid of idolatry. You just shifted it. You shifted it to friends. So instead of caring what your parents think, now you care deeply about what your friends think. How do my friends see me? How do they view me? Now, what kind of clothes do I wear? Why? To fit into what type of crowd that I want to be in. Right? What kind of things do I like? What are my hobbies? Why? Because those are the kind of people I want to impress. You see, it just shifts all your life. You shift from finding your value from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, to the next. And what this guy's saying, David Foster Wallace, is that this will eat you alive. It'll eat you alive. And I don't know enough about him to say for sure that this is why he committed suicide, but clearly it had something to do with it. If you say something like this less than a year before you kill yourself, I'm willing to bet that it had something to do with it. I'm willing to bet that it had something to do with it. Something that he put his value in ate him alive. It ate him alive. What's the next example he gave? If it's not money, beauty. Right? Beauty. Sexual allure. Right? How do I look? How do people see me? Right? And I'm gonna kind of shift that not only into sexual allure, I'm gonna say that into sexual relationships. Right? And that would even go to my wife. I'll say, for me, idolatry for me is easiest in my relationship with my wife. The way that she sees me and views me means more to me than anyone else. Now, that might sound sweet, but in essence, what I've essentially done when I do that, when I say that, is I put an unstoppable weight on Emma's shoulder to always make me feel like I have value and meaning. Does that make sense? I've hindered her, and I've hurt myself. I've put my value in a person, in my sexual allure, especially how you see yourself. You know, am I attractive as this person? Am I better looking than this person? You know, when you get into sexual relationships, you guys will notice this very quickly. You're going to become very keen on where your partner looks. It's going to cut you up inside when you think that they see someone more attractive than you. Why? Because that's where your value is. It's how good looking you are. Okay, what's the next one? Says power. Where's power? Feeling dominant over other people. Not everyone here struggles with that, but you know, feeling like you matter, feeling like you have authority or a say or a voice in life. Especially that could happen to those of us who grew up in families like me. We're the youngest, and you kind of always feel like your voice is overshadowed by others. You know, you can start to lose a lot of value that way. And you start to think, where can I have value? Where can I have meaning? Where can I have a voice? Where can people hear me? And you start trying to find something, make it your own, so that you have value, you have meaning, you have something to say. Next one, he says, your intellect. I like that one, because I think that one I also fall into a lot. Worship your intellect. Meaning, once again, do I find my value in my intelligence? What I know? Is that where I get ahead in life? What I know? Is that important to me? And that's what he says. Do I always feel stupid, a fraud, always on the verge of being found out, and so on? It's very important to once again, self-assess what's going on in your heart, to see where these idols are. Now, once we diagnose ourselves, which is the important thing, unless you diagnose yourself, you will never make it to step two. If you can't figure out where your idols are, where your value is, you can't make Jesus your identity. Does that make sense? You cannot make Jesus your identity until you figure out where you're pulling your identity from right now. And that's why so many Christians, they go about their Christian lives, they never deal with this issue. They let Jesus into all other areas and avenues of their lives, but they don't let him touch their idols. Right? When Jesus comes into your life, he wants all of you. He doesn't want just a part of you, he wants all of you. And unless you sit down, and this is important, I've only been doing this for the last week or two, but it's really cool, it's liberating. When I'm praying, I've never really thought of it this way. Praying to God isn't just about talking to him, but sometimes praying to God is a lot about meditating. Meaning mulling things over before the Lord. Really thinking through it. You know, sit down. Think before God. Where are the things that I'm pulling value from? And then you start asking, God, please replace those things with yourself. Now, here's why God's better. Okay, I'm going to read a story for you guys. It's probably a pretty familiar one. This is John chapter 4. Right? More commonly known as the story of the woman at the well. Right? It's John chapter 4. This is verse 7. It says this. A woman of Samaria came to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink," for his disciples had gone away to the city to buy food. And the woman of Samaria said to him, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? But the Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." Jesus answered and said to her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is who asks you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." The woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where then do you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as well as his sons and his livestock?" Jesus answered and said to her, "Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again, but whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never thirst. But the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water that I may not thirst, nor come here to draw." Jesus said to her, "Go call your husband and come here." And the woman answered and said, "I have no husband." Jesus said to her, You have well said, "I have no husband, for you have had five husbands, and the one whom you have now is not your husband. In that you spoke truly." So here Jesus is giving an example of this, where you pull your value from. Where you pull your value from. And he's going and talking to a woman. He's using this interesting analogy of water. water. And that's something that we could all understand, right? Especially in the desert. Okay, especially in the desert. You're into the summer, you need water all the time. You need to constantly refill it. You never feel like you're quite satisfied with water. Like, I notice when I eat a lot of food, I feel satisfied in my stomach. I feel full. But with water, it's never like that. You can always have more, right? Unless your stomach's completely stuffed with water and then you can't drink anymore. But in essence, like, you can still be thirsty in that and you can still need more. You keep going back, you keep going back, you keep going back all the time to the same substance, and it never fully satisfies you. It can only give you momentary satisfaction, which will be gone soon. That's the picture. That's what Jesus says. That is what your idolatry is like. You keep drinking from it, 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 and you keep going back because it's never going to fully satisfy you. It's never going to fully satisfy you. These things that I mentioned here, and guess what? We're all predisposed to going after these things because we've been molded by our culture. We've been molded by TV, ads, all these other things to make you think that you're not enough, that you're not good enough. This world, our consumeristic culture, it makes money off of your dissatisfaction. Because if you're satisfied, you'll stop spending money. So everything is aimed at making you feel like you're not enough. You're going to keep going back, keep going back, keep going back, and you're never going to feel like you have enough. It's going to eat you alive, as David Foster Wallace says. It's going to eat you alive. So he's using this example, and the woman is kind of talking to him. She keeps thinking that he's talking about water. She's like, dude, you don't have a bucket. How are you going to draw out of this well? And I actually got to see this practiced when I was in Afghanistan. It was actually kind of sad. There's no running water in the area of Afghanistan I went in. So in the morning, you'd have these little girls, usually like 12, 13 years old, and they'd have these big 40-gallon buckets, and they'd walk down this canal, and they'd fill them up, and then they'd trek it all the way back to their house. It was actually quite the chore to go there and to come back. Here this woman is. She's doing this chore for her entire household. Now, the very interesting thing is it actually says that the time that it was, this is back in verse 6, I don't have it, but it's actually the sixth hour, which means that this woman's doing it around noon. Now, think about that. If it's noon in July in Tucson, are you really going to want to walk down to a well, pull up 40 gallons of water, and walk all the way back to your house? Is that going to be fun to you? No, you're not going to want to do that. This woman's choosing to go at noon, and here's why. Here's how we can kind of insinuate why. Guess when most people will go? Early morning, right? Dawn. You want to go at 6 in the morning before it gets too hot. This woman's choosing to go at noon, and here's why. Jesus asks her, go get your husband. She says, I don't have a husband. He says, you're right. You've had 5 husbands, and you got a current live-in boyfriend. At 5 husbands, you have a current live-in boyfriend. So we kind of see that this woman's, her value in society has been kind of undercut. People don't really see her as very respectable. But what has Jesus just done? What has he revealed? Where does she get identity? Where does she get her value? Did you guys catch that? Where is it from? It's from men. That's where she gets her value. She goes from one husband to the next husband to the next husband to the next husband to the next husband. And now finally she's just, I'm done with it. And she's just living with a guy. It's how men see her is desperately where she needs to find value. That's where she gets it. Once again, that could be so true for every single one of us. It's how the opposite sex views us that we mine our value. We get our place in life. Now Jesus says, you're drinking out of something that will always leave you empty. But I got something that's actually going to fill you. He says, I got living water. He says, I'm better. And here's the major way that Jesus is better. You guys ready for this? Verse 10. Listen to this. Jesus answered and said to her, if you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Here's the worst thing about the things that we get value from is that all these things only take, they never give. All these things only take, they never give. Your greed only takes from you. Your sexual lust only takes from you and only steals from you. Your need to be desired by other people, it only takes from you. Your relationships with friends, they only take from you, right? In order to even have friends, what do you got to do? You got to act a certain way. You got to dress a certain way. You got to be a certain way in order to be accepted. You have to have certain talents that makes you valuable. You have to have certain abilities that makes you different, unique, important, right? You're always having to live up to a standard. in order to be accepted, in order to be valued. Here's how Jesus sets himself apart. He says, I'm completely different. I ask nothing from you. In fact, in this relationship, you should ask me. If you only knew the gift of God. If you only knew the gift of God. God is the only person. He is the only person on this planet, in this universe, that doesn't demand a single thing from you because it's all paid for in full by His own blood. By His own blood. This is the message of the gospel. This is the glory of the cross. That we have a God who became flesh. He lowered Himself to the lowest part of humanity and even died for your sake. And now He has risen again and He desires to be, He wants, He craves to be with you. It actually says in Psalm 45 that He craves your beauty. He desires it. He says He's a jealous God. He wants you. Now, what does that do to your value? What does that do to your value, your identity, when you understand it's something I don't earn, it's something I ask for? It's something I ask for. It's something that's freely given to me by the Son of God. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that absolutely wonderful? Every single other thing in this world is going to only demand something from you, but Jesus is the one who doesn't demand anything from you. He says, if only you knew the gift of God, you would ask me. You would ask me and I would give you fountains of living water. So here's another question. Do you ask Him? Do you ask Him? Have you sat down? Have you thought about it? Have you thought about the things that you get your value from? And the second question is, have you asked Jesus to replace those things? Jesus, give me this living water. Here's this woman. She's sitting there. She's like, man, what's this water? Tell me this water. Tell me this water. Now, I'm going to skip to the end of the story. I don't have it in there, Tom. I'm sorry. Now, at the end of the story, here's what happens. This is verse 27. And at this point, His disciples came, and they marveled that He talked to a woman. I'm not going to get into that. Once we talk about John 4, we'll talk about that. Yet no one said, what do you seek, or why are you talking to her? And the woman, this is verse 28, the woman left her water pot, went her way into the city, and said to the men, come, see a man who has told me everything that I ever did. Could this be the Christ? And they went out of the city and came to Him. Notice the symbolism here. She came to get water. Water represents idolatry. Jesus comes. He offers her living water. And what does she do? She leaves the water pot. She leaves the water. I don't need this anymore. I have something better. And what is the immediate thing that she does? Now that she has her value in Christ, what does she do? She goes and tells people about Him. I can't wait to tell you about this guy, this amazing man who has given me something that is so much greater than anything I've ever tasted in this world. I've tasted and I've seen that this guy is better. He's great. He's amazing. This is a little aside. This is going to be key for you guys when, if you want to share your faith with people. You have to understand something. What David Foster Wallace said, an atheist, it's true for every single person that you know that doesn't know the Lord, including people who have some other form of religion. Some other form of religion, Mormonism, Islam, Jehovah's Witness. All these people, guess what? Where do they get their value from? Following rules. That's where they get their value from. Their organization gives them value based on what they do. That's where their value comes from. For a Christian, my value comes from what Christ has done for me. That is it. I have asked for the living water, and He freely gives it to me. And I want to go and I want to share with people this amazing man who has given me perfect unity with Him by simply asking. That's what I want to talk about. So here's the next question I have for you guys. Do you see Jesus as beautiful? Do you see Him as better than the things you used to go after? Do you see Him as better? Now here's the last thing that it does. I'm going to finish with this. Not only does it do all those things for you, which is absolutely beautiful. I need to ask, I need to seek, I need to go after it. Here's something else that's beautiful. Here's a result of this. This is David Foster Wallace again. This is the end of his speech. Now listen to this. It's very important. The really important kind of freedom. So here he talks about the idea that he doesn't have any type of freedom. This is another thing that happens to you when you get caught up in idolatry and finding your value in other things. What he realized in his life is that he wanted desperately to stop seeking himself. He wanted to seek the betterment of someone else. And he could never do it. He could never do it. And he says the really important kind of freedom, this is the freedom that he craves but he can't have. The really important kind of freedom involves attention and awareness, discipline and effort, being able to truly care about other people and sacrifice for them over and over again in a myriad of petty, little, unsexy ways every day. That is real freedom. The alternative is unconsciousness, the default setting, the rat race, the constant gnawing sense of having had and lost some infinite thing. That's deep, right? Here's what he's saying. He wanted desperately to be able to selflessly love someone. That was the thing that he craved more than anything else. And he realized that his idolatry wouldn't let him do it. He realized that his idolatry would not let him do it. Here's why. If I'm empty, if I'm missing something, if I'm not complete, if I don't have identity in God, then every good thing that I do is ultimately going to have a selfish implication to it. Meaning, even when I serve my wife, the reason why I'm serving her is because she gives me my identity. I need to take care of her because that's where I get my identity from. The only reason why I hang out with my friends is because that's where I get my identity from. The only reason why I hang out with my parents is because that's where I get my identity from. The only reason why I go to work is because that's where I get my identity from. Does that make sense? Everything that you do in your life is self-motivated, and thus it's feeding that never-ending fire that's going to burn you alive. It's going to eat you alive. He says the only way to get out of it, the only way to get out of it is to love, and he realized he couldn't do it. Notice the language that he uses to describe this. He says it's a constant gnawing sense of having had and lost an infinite thing. That's what he said it's like. Now, this is what John says. This is 1 John 4, verse 7. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. In this, the love of God was manifested towards us, that God has sent His only begotten Son into the world that we might live through Him. And this is love, not that we love God, but that He loved us and sent His Son to be a propitiation for our sins. Here's what John's saying. If you want to love like God does, you need to first be loved fully, completely, and perfectly by someone who demands nothing from you. It's only when you're perfectly loved and have your identity perfectly set within God and how He sees you that you can finally get out of yourself and serve other people in an unselfish way. And the result is perfect joy. It's perfect joy. Instead of worshiping creatures, instead of worshiping created things, money, sex, friends, instead of worshiping and serving the creature, you will finally be able to move into serving the Creator. And when you serve the Creator, you will find true freedom and joy and peace. That is what we want to do. So as I move into these things, as I focus and I meditate on them, what am I actually running after? It's love. Running after love. The ability to receive perfectly and to give perfectly, perfect love. That is what I want to do. That is what I'm going after. And this means constant diligence. Notice what else David Foster Wallace said. He says, the real kind of freedom involves attention, awareness, discipline, effort. Attention, awareness, discipline, effort. That's what it takes. Meaning, as I'm going about my life, remember what he said, these things, this idolatry, it's insidious, it's in my unconscious. I need to focus. I need to focus. When I start seeing idolatry pop up inside of my heart, I need to recognize it, I need to go to God, and I need to pray. God, I'm failing right now. God, I'm seeing my identity in wrong things right now. Can you help me? Please make it about you. Please help me to love you. Help me to just receive your love today, God. Help me to stop earning love and start receiving and resting in love. And here's another way that you can know if you're not receiving this perfect kind of love. Do you feel tired? I ask that question to every single Mormon and Jehovah's Witness missionary I ever talked to. When they start talking, because one of the things that I'll do is I'll sit down with them and I'll ask them, like, dude, how do I get to heaven in your way of thinking? And they'll give me a long list of things. And after they're done with it, I'll be like, man, that sounds like great stuff. And I'll ask them the question, are you tired? Are you tired of doing all these things over and over again, trying to earn freedom, trying to earn forgiveness, trying to earn a place in life, your value? Does that ever make you tired? Most of them will say no, but they'll pause. And I could tell they'll think about it a little bit. And that's the question I want to ask you guys. Do you feel tired? Do you feel tired in your life? Do you feel worn out? Like you're constantly going after something that you can't obtain? Here's what Jesus says to you. Come unto me, all you who are weary and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Please give your burdens to Jesus tonight if you haven't. I'm going to pray and then Eileen's going to come up and do her teaching. Dear God, thank you so much that we can have identity in you, Lord, that we can have value in you, and all we have to do is seek it. Lord, all we have to do is ask. Lord, help us to know the gift of God. Help us not to miss what the woman at the well missed, God, but to see you as our everything, God, to meditate on the cross, to see what was done for us, Lord, and to rest in it. Help us to not have our identity in these things, these idolatrous things. Help me, Lord, to see the people in my life in the right way, in the right context, God, to enjoy them in the right context, God, with you being first. We love you so much, God, and we ask that you would forgive us, Lord, for sinning against you in this way. In your name, amen.